WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Throughout history, euphemistic language has been used to smooth over rough behavior. Linguist Jeff Nunberg has two examples, four centuries apart.
September of 1792, if you'll cast your mind back, was a critical moment for the French Revolution. A while earlier, the king had been captured at the town of Varennes as he was trying to flee the country. As the French debated his fate, a Prussian army advanced on Paris, bent on restoring the monarchy. Prudent citizens began to hedge their bets. The artful Talleyrand, who had earlier made a successful transition from courtier to revolutionary, found it expedient to depart for England on private business. The storm broke on September 2nd with the news that the French army had been defeated at Verdun. With the encouragement or the tacit approval of the authorities, paramilitary groups broke into the prisons and slaughtered over 1,000 inmates, many of them royalists or priests who had refused to sign an oath of allegiance to the revolution. The September massacres, as they were called, horrified all of Europe and embarrassed even the authorities who had incited or condoned them. A certain linguistic distancing was called for. Danton called the executions an unavoidable sacrifice. The Minister of the Interior, Roland, admitted that there had been some occasional effervescences, as he called them, and admitted that some citizens had been overzealous. But he went on to insist that the majority of the victims were guilty of crimes and that the authorities could not have foreseen or prevented the excesses. Nor should the enemies of the people be allowed to use the affair to discredit honest citizens. This was too much for Edmund Burke, that implacable opponent of the revolution, who excoriated Roland for his euphemisms. When Roland speaks to the populace, he said, the whole compass of the language is tried to find synonymies and circumlocutions for massacre and murder. I'm not sure exactly what brought this episode to mind as I was reading about the controversy surrounding L.A. Police Chief Daryl Gates. Maybe it was simply the coincidence that the L.A. affair began with the arrest of a fleeing suspect named King. But the rhetorical similarities were intriguing. Here was Chief Gates explaining the abuse of a prisoner in police custody as an aberration and an unfortunate excess. And here again were those references to a regrettable overzealousness, this time in the unlikely mouth of Bob Hope, who rallied to the support of his old friend Gates by saying that just because a couple of officers were overzealous doesn't discredit the thousands of good ones. Now, I'll grant you that the analogy here is only approximate. The circumstances of the September massacres fit the Rodney King affair about as well as those French mansard roofs fit Beverly Hills ranch houses and Van Nuys photomats. What's curious, rather, is that there should be any linguistic resemblances whatsoever. After all, most euphemisms live brief lives. After a while, their cover becomes threadbare as they mold themselves to the shape of the things they were supposed to conceal. Liquidate, execute, terminate, they all lost their euphemistic flavor after a few years. So overzealous has had a remarkably long run as an excuse for crimes and misdemeanors. You can find the word in contemporary accounts of every affair from Wounded Knee to Watergate. It testifies to an enduring belief that there's a special dispensation for abuses committed out of devotion to a cause. By historical standards, Chief Gates got off lightly. Roland had to flee the country himself and committed suicide when he learned that his wife had been guillotined. Before she died, though, Madame Roland got off the most memorable line of the whole affair, liberty, what crimes are committed in thy name. Danton was guillotined a while later. As usual, Talleyrand had the last word. He returned to France in 1795 and served as minister under the successive regimes of the Directory, the Consulate, and Napoleon's Empire. After Waterloo, he represented Louis XVIII at the Congress of Vienna, and when the Bourbons were deposed once more in 1830, he served the new July monarchy. His enemies called him unprincipled, but he preferred to think of it differently. Sainte-Beuve reports that someone once asked Talleyrand the secret of his political longevity. His answer was, n'ayez pas de zèle, or loosely, lay off the zeal.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Institute for Research on Learning in Palo Alto, California.